you take this woman as your lawful wedded wife?
Ooh, yeah!
Oh, no.
Place the ring on her finger and repeat after me. With this ring...
With this ring...
I thee wed...
I thee wed...
Hello and welcome, Place to Be Nation. I'm your co-host, Ryan Everett.
I'm your co-host, Cindy Everett.
And we're here with This Ring, episode 45, where we'll be going over WWF King of the Ring, 1998.
With This Ring for King of the Ring.
Yep, exactly. The very same ring.
Not exactly. Okay, sure.
So, as we're going through, chronicling through, so... And Over the Edge, 1998, Steve Austin defeated Dude Love.
Yep.
With Vince McMahon as the referee by Vince McMahon's own hand.
Yeah.
The match ended, as yes, he stipulated it would. And then the next night, Raw in Chicago, mm-hmm. which I'll follow up with later about how I should have gone but didn't.
Okay.
But...
Don't know where that's going.
So, all right. But anyway, so Raw was in Chicago the night after Milwaukee, obviously. It's a very easy, mm-hmm. Car ride down after the pay-per-view. Sleep in the Harrison Inn by the Rosemont Horizon.
Nice.
So it was Dude Love started the show in the ring and was asking for Vince McMahon to come out and give him another match. And Vince McMahon came out and said how pitiful he was, and then he fired him. So Dude Love is fired.
Did we watch that one?
We watched it early, like
I was gonna a couple say, I'm looking at times ago. And my notes start with Sable coming back.
Right.
Okay.
Well, also then this night, I think we watched it for Over the Edge. It was Undertaker versus Kane for the number one contenders match. And Kane ends up winning, so it's going to be Kane versus Steve Austin at King of the Ring. And Mankind came back at the end because Mankind was still hired, apparently. They had different contracts. every personality had a different contract.
Of course.
So, he wanted to hit those appearances as Mankind to make sure you hit that per diem.
Right.
So then the Raw we watched first was the Raw 2 weeks later. So it was right between Over the Edge and King of the Ring. Where the show starts off and Sable comes out.
Yes.
After she had been lost her WWF Loser Leaves Forever match. But she comes back, and this is the first of many times she has an angle where it seems like she's having sex with Vince McMahon. You're not sure how much the consent is.
I get those vibes. I just kind of thought he was, using her.
Yeah, but it kind of seems like he's using her for a reason.
Right, yeah.
And, there's later times where... They do the same angle again, but it's very implicit.
Implicit or explicit?
Implicit. Okay. No, it's like they make out on screen and stuff. So Sable comes out and she's been rehired. Mm-hmm. And then after that, later in the night, we get the big Hell in a Cell tag team match between Steve Austin and The Undertaker and Mankind.
No, Undertaker... Steve Undertaker, Kane and Mankind.
Yeah, versus Kane and Mankind. And Steve Austin's unsure if he can trust The Undertaker at this point. Vince McMahon is already trying to sow the seeds of discontent.
Gotcha. And this is where they go in. It's like, everyone's like, where's The Undertaker? And he pops it like a GoPro. Yeah.
As we were watching, you said like, The Undertaker's going to be like under the ring or something, isn't he?
Yeah.
And like three seconds later, The Undertaker pops up. Because all he wanted to do was just beat the shit out of Paul Bearer.
Yes.
Because Paul Bearer had been talking about how his mom had done stuff with Paul Bearer himself and was Kane's mom, so The Undertaker didn't like that.
Right.
So he just wanted to beat the hell out of Paul Bearer.
Yeah, it worked.
And Steve Austin, though, kind of gets the better of... Well, Mankind was just kind of like the foil, but he actually gets the better of Kane for a little bit, which was like the first time anyone had done that outside of The Undertaker.
Huh.
Vader always... killed by Kane, Mankind got killed by Kane. But this is the one time where it's like, hey, someone that could actually stand up to him.
Yeah, I was going to say, it seemed like Kane only fought The Undertaker for a while. I know he fights...
It's kind of like why the gimmick was created, was to be someone... Like, he wasn't supposed to be a guy who stuck around for, what, 20 years?
Yeah.
He was supposed to be like...
More than 20 years, yeah.
I mean, yeah, I mean, he's still, every once in a while, they just throw him out there, you know.
Jeez.
Give his thoughts on Roe versus Wade and get out of the ring. Mm-hmm. But he was supposed to be like a guy, okay, you debut in October, you're going to lose to The Undertaker at WrestleMania, that's going to be the end of you.
Huh.
But those, even like the 3 months probably between Hell in the Cell and then like the Royal Rumble, where he burned, yeah, you know, burned him up in the casket, he was getting over so big, they were like,
oh, okay,
we actually have a character here that could exist outside of The Undertaker. They wait a while to like have him exist outside of,
gotcha,
The Undertaker, but,
yeah,
you know, and it's always a thing that if they have nothing going for either guy, it's always an easy,
yeah,
go-to thing. And for right now, they still have enough story to tell that they can just go back and forth.
Right. Gotcha.
So, yeah. So, they have this tag match, but it's not really a tag match. But Steve Austin shows that he could hang with Kane.
Mm-hmm.
The Undertaker shows is he can beat the hell out of Paul Bearer, which I don't think was ever really in question. But
yeah. Still good to see.
So, then, well, yeah.
And then they see the man, Steve Austin and Kane, like, fight on top of the ring.
Yeah, they fight.
Cool,
yeah, because Kane was, Kane got on top of the cage to try and, like, break in, mm-hmm, to help his daddy, Paul Bearer.
Right.
But Steve Austin sees a distracted Kane on top of the cage and is like,
nice,
oh, I'm going to go get me some,
yeah,
of this. And starts, yeah, bashing him with the chair. And
yeah,
yeah, and that sets up the next week, which we didn't watch, but I'll,
okay,
just tell you real. So this is the first time we ever hear Kane speak.
Oh, I saw the little clip of that.
And, like, yeah, the thing, that they always said that Kane couldn't speak because his vocal cords were so damaged during the fire. But he could speak if he has the voice modulator like Ned from South Park.
I was just going to say, that's like, I'm sure. That's,
yes.
It wasn't Ned, it was Uncle Jimbo that had the...
No, Uncle Jimbo was his friend.
Oh,
Ned,
right,
was the
and,
friend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I also saw someone at GNL the first time I went there that had the Kane voice box gimmick, as we call it. So, yeah, so he says that if he does not... First, he wants to challenge Steve Austin to a first blood match.
Mm-hmm.
And if he does not win, he will bleed, he will breathe his last breath and set himself on fire.
In that order?
Yes. So they make it sure that you know that not only is he going to light himself on fire, he's going to do it so bad that he kills himself.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it was... There's stakes in the title match.
Evidently, yeah. Well, just for Kane, Steve Austin's like, I'm not going to,
well,
do that.
His belt's on the line.
Yeah, but he's, okay, he's not willing to answer you.
He'll
thing.
Live,
right,
regardless.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly. So.
So, yeah. So we go to the event itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it is in the Igloo in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
That's right.
And the opening match is kind of, we've settled on the last couple of months, Taka Michinoku,
yep,
and Friends
things,
versus,
yes,
Kai and Tai, and this time it's the Headbangers.
Yeah.
And they all wear the Headbanger attire out to,
that's
ringside,
right,
and Taka does his move for his main finisher as his slime dancing move.
Obviously.
They have a nice little quick 7-minute six-man tag match. I liked it.
Yeah, I said the Japanese guys are fast, a little uncoordinated.
Yeah.
Entertaining as far as opening matches go.
Yeah.
And Taka and the Headbangers win. Yeah.
They do.
Nothing wrong with this.
No, yeah, I think it's a nice little match. It's kind of, they're kind of burning through the Kai and Tai versus Taka matches. Like, the last pay-per-view, the Kai and Tai team got the win.
Okay.
And they had the guy who got the pinfall fight Taka the next night. And that was it. Like, that's it.
Gotcha.
Singles match. Like, they could have easily done 3 pay-per-views in a row of, like, Taka loses to their top guy, and then Taka has to fight through the other 2 guys to get up to the top guy, but they kind of didn't want to do that.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, this is a fine match for what it is.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to say about it.
And then, was after this the Vince McMahon?
Yes.
Okay,
Sable,
yes,
comes out to introduce Vince McMahon.
Right.
And then she kind of, like, reads from the script, and first,
right,
one's happy to see her, and then when she starts talking about Vince and how greedy he is, everyone kind of turns on her.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, Pat Patterson.
Pat Patterson pats her on the ass.
Yeah,
that's the main highlight of this.
Well, yeah, and, like, he does it very obviously,
yeah,
right? So she, like, gets
slaps
the reaction
him.
And slaps him. Then Vince starts insulting the audience.
Yeah, because it's in Pittsburgh, so there's plenty of people to make fun of.
Well, wherever he wants.
I mean, yeah, you could always,
yeah,
go for the cheap.
Cheap shots. Yep. But there was, I don't know how that one, remember how that one ended. It was just
kind of him guaranteeing that there would be a new champion.
Yeah. Okay.
Steve Austin would lose. Because it's his main goal. Yeah.
Alright, next one kind of like blah.
Yeah, then we have the two King of the Ring semifinal
matches
next. So first is
JJ versus Ken
Shamrock. Yeah, the great Jeff Jarrett.
Versus Ken Shamrock.
Which,
well, yeah, this is kind of, I don't know, I guess I'm still like not used to the setups, but I thought it was interesting how it wasn't just the King of the Ring. It was like the King of the Ring and the
summer. Right, so 93, 94, and 95, they had all, it was 8-man field.
The whole thing be a bracket, yeah.
Pretty much, so it was like, there'd be 11 total matches on the card, 7 of them were the tournament, and mm-hmm. 4 other, like, matches. But by 96, the fields were getting kind of weak, so gotcha. They kind of had to...
Kind of thin it out a little bit.
Like, by 98, they could have definitely had it be the top 8 guys in the tournament, mm-hmm. but they still kind of... They had so many other matches that they had to work in.
Gotcha.
And it would have been hard having... I mean, so if you go from a 4-man tournament to a 8-man tournament, that's 4 extra matches.
Right.
And you already have 9 matches on this card.
They could have done like a play-in, like the NCAA.
I mean, 6. They sometimes did that, like, with the free-for-all before show. It was, like, a buy-in to the tournament itself. But This tournament, yeah, they had, like, other matches they wanted to get to. So, yeah, I agree. I never liked when it was just 4 men.
Yeah.
At the pay-per-view.
It's pretty short.
You just have to win 2 matches.
Exactly.
I mean, it's tough, but it's not...
Right.
It's not the King of the Ring.
Yeah, it's not like...
You're not winning 4 matches in a night.
Right. Well, I'm glad we just really feels the same about the...
Yes, the King of the Ring qualifying.
Yeah, I mean, I said... At this age, he's just old and nice and slow.
Yeah.
Kind of normal stuff. Decent crowd engagement.
Jeff Jarrett's still wrestling today. In AEW, just so you
that's
know.
That's crazy.
I like how you call him old.
He was old in 1998. So he's even older now, I guess.
He wasn't really that old. He's old-fashioned, though. That I would say.
Why.
Yeah, I mean, he was 29.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
No, 31. 31.
That's
but still. Like, he wasn't old. He was just like, he has the Memphis-style, old-school style of wrestling, and he never really got out of it. Like,
yeah, because he definitely has a different style.
Like, if you watch him and his whole WWF career, and Randy Savage, like, in the first 6 months of his WWF career, they're very similar. Because it's the Memphis heel thing where, like, you stall.
Oh, yeah.
Anyone, like, touches your hair, you freak out.
Gotcha.
But Randy Savage evolved past that.
He did.
And became, like, the greatest wrestler of all time. Whereas Jeff Jarrett was just like, no. When I learned my first 6 months of wrestling, I'm going to do that.
Like, I'm not gonna learn my new tricks.
Exactly.
Okay. So, yeah. Shamrock wins, not surprisingly.
Yeah. That was kind of a given.
Yeah. And then the Rock.
Sorry.
The Rock versus someone named Severin the Beast. Where
did
that guy?
Dan the Beast Severin.
Oh, I wrote Severin the Beast. Well, that's kind of the same thing.
It's basically the same.
Where did that guy
so
come
he
from?
Was,
who's that guy?
So he was a UFC fighter.
Okay.
And him and Ken Shamrock, they had 2 big UFC fights.
Mm.
And so it made me rent UFC videos for the first time.
Oh, okay.
But before we get to that,
Dan
Shamrock came in like March of 98. And then he eventually became, like, he was just, like, the NWA representative because they had a horrible Jim Cornette gimmick where he was, like, with the Rock and Roll Express.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was trying to bring the NWA back. It was just bad. But then they just had him wrestle, and he was, like, a destroyer. Like, he was the NWA champion, which at the time meant nothing, really.
Yeah.
It was, like, king of an indie group.
Gotcha.
But he, like...
I like that house when I watched. The woman said she was a wrestler.
Yeah, she probably had wrestled like in a bar at some point.
She said she just won a belt. That's why she was able to buy a house.
I mean, well, no, that's not right at all. That's fake.
That's
there's no pride. Yeah, there's
some liberties.
It's not. That's like Gorilla Monsoon saying, "Oh, he's not going to go to the pay window if he doesn't win this match." Like, no, you get paid based on what the gate is. You don't get paid because you won the title.
Okay, well, this woman on House Hunters said something different, so.
Well.
We can take that conversation off mic.
I'll talk her, take her tax accounts into. But anyways, forgot where it was.
Dan Severin.
Oh yeah. So there was UFC. It was always kind of like they were obviously building a crash for Ken Shamrock and Dan Severin because they were like the early. I mean, this was early UFC when like half the pay per view companies banned them because it was human cockfighting. They said and like they like John McCain was like having Senate bills banning it because it was so barbaric to be profiting off of this horrible thing. And
well, the people in the fights got paid too. It's not like they were.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, there was a stupid thing for Congress to get involved with, but there should to this day probably be reforms in how the payments are
deeded
out. But that's irregardless of that. So it was always like, these two are on a collision course somehow. And it seemed like King of the Ring would be obvious because they talk up both of them in the way, like, about how their tournament tested. Like, oh, it's going to obviously be Dan Severin versus Ken Shamrock. I got the WF magazine back in the day, and they had a fold-out in June of 98 with the 8 top qualifiers, even though they had to send that magazine out before the 8 top qualifiers were known.
Don't think about that.
But I definitely had it being Shamrock versus Severin in the finals. Okay. And I think that was like what everyone thought it was going to be. Because The Rock was the IC champ, but he could lose a tournament match because he's still going to be the champ.
That's right. That wasn't on the line.
Right. But is that how it happens?
No, The Rock wins. Well, D'Lo Brown comes out, does a frog splash on the Beast. So really D'Lo Brown wins it.
Well, because D'Lo Brown had fought Dan Severin in his qualifying match for the King of the Ring. And he had bent him in half with a bow and arrow submission move. And it injured D'Lo's pectoral muscle. And that's why he gets the catcher's mitt vest that he has. It's not just this pay-per-view that we will see him with, having this vest. The protective vest, as it is. But yeah, that is enough to incapacitate Dan the Beast Severin and send The Rock to the finals.
But that chest protector is probably pretty heavy.
Yeah,
so The Rock's slowly getting better.
Yeah, he's definitely getting to the point where he can carry a, at the very least, very good match.
Yeah. Okay, then the next match is very confusing.
The next match is just horrible. I mean,
like, why?
So,
talk about it.
I mean, we should go over it real quick. So, Too Much, Brian Christopher and Scott Taylor, which is Brian Christopher's Jerry Lawler's son, like veiled references to it always.
Yeah, I kind of remember.
And Scott Taylor was a jobber for a while, but then they kind of like.
But why did they even have this match?
Because they had it. So Al Snow was very popular in ECW, like earlier in the year. And they signed him to a contract. Like they actually always had him to a contract. And then he got popular in ECW when it was like a quasi WWF developmental thing. They're like, oh, he's popular, let's send him up. But they didn't realize why he was popular because he was a very small fish in a very small pond. And
didn't translate out.
And
didn't scale.
Like, he had like months of build up there where like he was talking to this mannequin head and like being delusional, but like it worked in like this these small 2 minute promos. And then they just send him out with no promos in front of 18,000 people who have no idea who aren't watching ECW. Like, it was just bound to fail. And it's like, and here's this game. It's like, I mean, maybe half the people were like, oh, is that Leif Cassidy, the guy who's the bad half of the New Rockers, which was a horrible gimmick in and of itself. Like, there was no one who, not a lot of people were in on kind of the joke that it was.
Well, yeah, it definitely did.
And it plays off as a joke.
Yeah, it was very odd.
Yeah, so Jerry Lawler, like right before the match starts, declares that it's Too Much versus Al Snow and Head.
Right.
And that Jerry Lawler is the guest referee.
That's right. He hops in the ring.
So, he hops in the ring and then he decides to put a bottle of Head & Shoulders
shampoo
under Head so that his shoulders could be pinned to the ground and counts three. And that's something that, as I think Jim Ross points out, that set wrestling back about 20 years.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah. So, okay, so it was like a gimmick on a smaller scale on a different,
Yeah, it's kind of was like, it was like, we need something to fill time on this pay-per-view.
Yeah, they
They have this do it with, it is the, or no, the next, actually the next match, which was also like not announced and just came out of nowhere, was X-Pac versus Owen Hart, but that's an actual good match.
Yeah, that was good. Then like Mark Henry comes out.
Vader comes Vader, running out.
Yeah,
Vader and Mark Henry had beef at the time.
Oh, and I like X-Pac.
Yeah.
And I kind of wrote, like, it was a good match. It was a good singles match. I don't know why they had everybody run out and, like, cause the chaos.
I think it was because
I was enjoying just
watching. It was X-Pac's, it was just his second match back after, like, he had been out for, like, 9 months-ish.
Okay.
Like, October he got injured in WCW, broke his neck. And he was out for, until, like, 2 weeks before this in June is when he started coming back. So, still early in his comeback. I think I just wanted to make sure that, like, they knew Owen Hart versus X-Pac could have a good match, but they wanted to have the Gaga around it to just kind of make it stand out more than just, I mean, because there's enough storylines going around everyone that they could still have their good match and get other things involved.
Yeah, I thought it was fine as it is, but fair enough.
Yeah, X-Pac, I agree. It's a good match.
Mm-hmm. And then next we had New Age Outlaws versus the New Midnight Express.
The New Midnight Express. And this is, this is another bonus match, they call it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very bonus.
Yeah, that's a very good way of saying it. There's nothing really, I mean, I don't know. It's, the New Age Outlaws, did they ever have any storylines? They were Degeneration X, I guess.
Yeah, it was kind of, their storylines were with Degeneration X. Like, they didn't have
their own thing.
At this point, no. I mean, they had kind of been feuding with, like, LOD and DOA also at the same time, but like they weren't real contenders at this point. And so the tag division itself was kind of weak, although it was about to get stronger because the week before this on Raw, Kane and Mankind won a tag team battle royal to become the number one contenders for the tag team titles. So
gotcha.
The tag team titles are about to step up, as we'll see at our next pay-per-view.
Okay, good to know. But I just said, good match, good pacing. It was relatively short.
Yeah, it's a nice 9.5 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a good formula tag team match.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to screw up. Just follow the regular
beats. Don't have your partner's a person and not a mannequin.
If you have, if you're, you have a human as a tag team partner, that helps you.
Usually.
Yeah, depending how good of a worker the head is.
That's true, yeah. But next we have Rock v. Rock.
Yeah, the King of the Rock, King of the Ring
King
Final.
Of Rock.
King of the Rock Finals.
I don't know why I thought this, but is Shamrock his real last name, or is that a stage name?
Well, it's kind of weird because...
Oh, interesting. I know this is kind of a question.
Because I kind of know it, but... So he came... Like, his early life, it says, like, he was... had a weird upbringing... his father was an Air Force enlistee, but he ran away from home when he was 10.
Oh, jeez.
I'm trying to find where, the name comes from. So, eventually, he became, a foster kid, and went to a bunch of different places, and then he ended up going to this, dojo, learn how to, at first, I think it was just, jiu-jitsu, and, eventually adopted the name Shamrock.
Hmm. Okay, so it's not his real name.
It's not his real name, but it's...
It's not like a name that he came up for.
Like, he had the name before he came to WWF, obviously. Like, he had that before UFC even.
Interesting.
Everything. So, yeah, it's...
Okay.
I don't have enough time to read through all this, but... I know he was Kenny Parisi at one point in the, early shoot/real wrestling federation in Japan.
Okay. Interesting. So not like his necessarily birth name.
No, it's not.
But not like something specifically for WWE.
Yeah, it wasn't like the WWF saw him. It was like, you're Ken Shamrock, a great Irish fighter.
Got it. It was weird seeing China speak Spanish.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. They let that just out of the bag. Like, hey, she could do this if she wanted to.
Yeah. She doesn't speak at all, but she'll speak Spanish.
Yes.
So that makes sense. Triple H, that kind of wanders around and he spits water in The Rock's face.
Yeah.
And he gives Shamrock the one up. I said, yeah, some good combinations, a little choppy. Rock taps out. So crazy eyes Shamrock.
Yeah, and this is kind of the official end to their feud that had been going really for like over 6 months. Like they actually started it in like November at Survivor Series. So, and this is like the end. Like he makes him tap out in the ankle lock. He doesn't win the Intercontinental title, obviously, but wow. He beats him cleanly. And that's, they never really fight. Like,
really?
Well, they do again, but not on this. For this reason, you know, this feud is over now.
This ends the feud.
Yes.
Ooh,
I mean, Ken Shamrock won it pretty fully, like, evenly, like, just wins him, beats him cleanly.
Rock had helped the last match, so he was kind of the...
Right.
Didn't really quite earn that same way that Ken Shamrock did.
And then, really ho-hum match. Undertaker beats Mankind. Hell in a Cell. Nothing happens.
Yep.
Boring.
No one ever remembered it.
Undertaker pins him with a tombstone. Yep. Like always.
Yada yada. I'm sure I talked about this the first time we watched this, but like, what was your reaction the first time you saw this?
So, I was watching it scrambled and didn't really get what was happening.
Yeah, I was going to say.
The next day, I was just like, all about the Steve Austin and lost the title. I knew like Undertaker or Mankind got thrown off the Cell, but like in the first Hell in the Cell match, Shawn Michaels fell off he was hanging from the top.
Yeah.
And got knocked off and fell through. I know we watched it at one point.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, that's probably what happened the first time, and then the second time he like got chokeslammed through, and that's pretty cool. I gotta see that.
Yeah. But
then the next day at Little League I got tape from Nick DiMaggio, because he was my tape.
DeFrancisco, you mean?
No, DiMaggio, a different fellow. They're redheaded fellow.
Okay.
So he gave me that tape, and then that, like, right before Raw, or no, it was after Raw, because we had a game that night, so the game was like 6 to 7, got home, ate dinner, watched Raw. After Raw, I watched the pay-per-view, and I was like, whoa, like, this happened?
Crazy, yeah.
I was like, that makes sense that Mankind wasn't on Raw last night.
Yeah, or this night. Seriously. Good thing they gave him the night off.
Yeah, so yeah, it was, but yeah, it's probably the craziest two bumps ever in a wrestling match. You'll never see anything like that again. Like, he talks about that now on his podcast, like how so many of times his matches would have been stopped nowadays in WWE.
Yeah, and the fact that it wasn't even just the first one, he like, twice, and the tax was just like over the top.
And the first one,
we should have Mick Foley on our podcast.
I mean, for $120, he'll do a cameo. I don't know.
So we'll pay him $120, get him. Well, cameos are recorded.
Yeah, we could record it and then just play it, I guess.
No.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Can we just pay for like 10 minutes of his time?
Probably. He seems like a nice guy.
He does.
He has a lot of shows this summer for
his comedy shows.
Yeah, because it's 25. Oh my God, it's 20. Yeah, it's 25 years for the Hell in a Cell match, but none are in Chicago, unfortunately.
What does that have to do with that? Like, his comedy show be 25 years?
Well, no, because like all the shows are going to be based around the Hell in a Cell because it was 25 years ago this year. Like,
I know,
but it's, you know, it's a special anniversary. I mean, most of his comedy, just from what I've seen, the one show I saw, was about, like, centered around that match.
Yeah,
I mean, that is
the
most famous thing he's ever done.
Yeah, it's crazy how he's still a functioning person.
And we know why, because as he told us at the comedy show we saw 10 years ago now, that as one guy told him, hey, I know what you did. It was a magic table. Mm-hmm. And Mick said, he got it.
Yep.
It was a magic table. Yep. It was just...
I just feel like that there's so many things that could have gone wrong with
that. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's weird because, I mean, they've had plenty of DVDs, plenty of network shows, plenty of books. You know, Mick Foley's book is, there's 3 chapters about it. They never really come out and say what exactly was supposed to happen.
Yeah. Like, how do you see that playing out? Like,
I think the main idea was... It was supposed to be, he was going to get thrown off, but I don't think they knew how. And then I think it was supposed to be he's going to get thrown through, but they didn't know how.
Okay.
And what they did is what they did.
Yeah. I mean, when he threw him down the second time, like that, like, panel was loose, right?
Yeah, and yeah. But he was legitimately knocked out because, not so much because of the choke slam, but the chair, like, follows him down, hits him. That's what knocked the tooth through his nose.
Oh, yeah.
Which is the infamous, like, picture of him smiling. It was just he was trying to show that his tongue had a hole through it.
Oh, yeah.
And his tongue could stick through and touch his nose, but it didn't happen because of the facial hair.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Ugh. Well, not funny, but like the almost like ironic part is like the person who got hurt the most in that match was the Undertaker.
Yeah, so the Undertaker had that was another thing where it's not, he had a sprained ankle going into the match.
Oh, okay.
And then, he does the free fall from the cell into the ring to continue destroying this poor man. And he supposedly went from a, like, either a low sprain to a high sprain or from a high sprain to a broken ankle. But regardless, he didn't wrestle until the July pay-per-view. So he was hurt, obviously.
Yeah, but it's just like, really?
It's
like, this guy, like,
yeah, the guy who took like a 3-foot bump. Like,
right.
I mean, that's still, I wouldn't want to do that. Just free fall from 3 feet. There's dangers in that because I'm old and uncoordinated. But yeah, the Undertaker did that and at least hurt his ankle for a few weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, Mick Foley had like, it wasn't a lacerated kidney, but it was like a bruised kidney and a dislocated shoulder. I think were the official things, and obviously a concussion, like looking back, but they didn't technically diagnose that at the time. But yeah, it was bruised kidney and I think dislocated shoulder. Because you could tell when he's climbing up the cell.
Yeah.
And the second time, like, it's just pure adrenaline, but even with pure adrenaline, like, his one shoulder is not doing anything.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, he gets up there, and he said that was, like, the most athletic thing he's ever done in his career. It was climb the cage with a dislocated shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
And the Undertaker plays it great. He, like, looks in such disbelief for, like, 2 seconds, and then, like, right away, like, watches over him, like, okay, I'm going to kill this person now.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure some of it was real disbelief.
yeah, I think it was, and I think it was also, like, his character, because he said in the, like, in McFoley's book and in the documentary about it, like, after the chokeslam, he looked down and he thought he was dead.
Oh, jeez.
So he jumped down, and the only thing they could think of doing was having Terry Funk yell at him for a minute, and have the Undertaker chokeslam and hope Mick Foley wakes up. And luckily, that's what worked.
Yeah.
And then the craziest thing, I think, is after, so Terry Funk's get chokeslammed. Mick Foley's barely conscious.
Right.
And then they have, like, another 8 minutes of a match.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And it's not,
you
like,
you could end with just the table fall. Yeah,
it could have easily been, he chokeslams Terry Funk. Mankind, like, comes to him and gives him a mandible claw. Undertaker, like, punches him out. Tombstone. Match over.
Yeah.
No one would have been like, oh, this was a ripoff.
Right, right. It was almost, like, too much.
But, yeah, like, I think in the book, they talk about how, like, right away, the Undertaker goes for the old school, like, you know, the old school.
Yes.
Or
Sound of Music.
Sound of Music, as you call it.
That's
and, like, nice. Mankind, like, immediately crotches him.
Right.
That's where, like, I think Undertaker, the referee, and everyone else is like, okay, Mankind, he's good enough to finish the match.
Yeah.
And they go through, like, it's a normal Undertaker-Mankind match. It's good. It's Mankind introduces Tax for the first time in WWE history.
Oh, really? That was the first time?
Yeah.
Yeah, people were, like, going crazy about that.
Yeah, because, like, they had shown videos of him in Japan in Tax matches, but this was the first time they actually had it live in front of them. Mm-hmm. So, adding a fire to the concussion theory, after the match, he's in the back with Undertaker and Mike Chioda, the referee.
Yeah.
Is like, oh, Undertaker, or Mark, I'm really sorry. We weren't able to use the tax in the match.
That's right.
Yeah. As he has tax sticking out of, like, all of his upper body.
Gosh.
And the referee, Mike Chioda, was like, Mick, don't worry, you got to use the tax. He's like, oh, did I?
Jeez, yeah, he was out of it.
Yeah, he was. And like in Beyond the Mat, the documentary, that's one of the things they play, like, is his...
Oh, post.
Like, he had a post-match answering machine call to the director, because they were friends before.
Okay.
The movie, and it was, like, kind of showing, like, how out of it what he was. And so this was, like, the worst he ever got injured.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's been a great match.
Yeah, it's...
And then I mean, they're kind of like, how do you follow that?
Exactly. And it's kind of like... How do you rate, like...
Yeah, it's so, like, a
classic zone. Like, it's, yeah, it's... The match, it's, like, Bell to Bell, the Shawn Michaels versus Undertaker Hell in a Cell is a better match.
Right.
But, like, emotionally,
yeah,
what you have is...
Yeah, amazing.
Like, yeah, one man's, like...
personal.
Passion play of the WWF. I mean, really.
Yeah, that's true.
So then after that, we have a world title match where the one guy loses, so he's going to breathe his last breath by a fire.
Breathe his last breath and then set himself on fire.
Oh, I think it was set himself, I guess, it had to have been the other
order. Well, I don't know. We didn't watch it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, whatever. He's going to kill himself by setting himself on fire. And they have, like,
gasoline.
18 bottles of gasoline around ringside.
Well, they dumped it on Earl Hebner.
Well, the best thing is they get bottles of gasoline on the announcers, kind of. Like, how many bottles of gasoline is it going to take to burn a fella?
Apparently a lot.
I guess.
Yes, well, it was the first blood match, though.
Yeah, that was the first blood. And they did make a good thing on the free-for-all, which was, again, that was the half hour before the show aired. It was on the TV Guide channel, the TV Guide channel.
Oh.
Like, you know, the grid channel?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, for a half hour, it was on that.
Huh.
So if, like, you change there, and I was like, oh, half
Wait,
hour.
Your TV Guide channel had, like, shows on it?
Yeah.
Yours just put, like, local ads.
No, around, like, 96, because that's when WWF started the free-for-all. Or also, at this point, you could just go to the pay-per-view channel. Like, it was channel 67 here.
Oh, okay.
And the first half hour would play free. Oh. This was a free-for-all.
Because
it's free for all.
I get it.
But... So they even had Earl Hebner get interviewed during it.
Oh, okay.
And he said, like, because Steve Austin is, like, one of, like, the guys who's notorious for easily bleeding.
Okay.
Like, because he does actually ended up getting cut in his back. And they, like, were worried, like, oh, what if Kane hits him, like, in the nose or the eye and he actually starts bleeding,
right, like
4 minutes in the match? So Earl Hebner, like, explains, no, it's going to have to be a big cut. Uh-huh. Like, it's going to have to be... He basically says, no, the guy's going to have to take a razor blade out of his wrist tape, cut himself across the forehead, and bleed for this match to end. Which is how it goes, but no. But it was a good point to make, because Steve Austin is, especially when they have the Hell in the Cell cage
raising and lowering. Yeah, it was just kind of stupid. I don't know.
I mean...
It didn't really, like, add anything.
It was kind of like, I know what they were trying to do, showing how, like, how Vince McMahon was so against Steve Austin winning, but... It didn't really, there was only one time where it really helped Steve, like, Kane.
Because
when he's, like, choking him and it's coming down on his face. But then after that, like, Kane's hung up by it, like.
Yeah.
It was, like, if you just had it down the whole match, it would have made sense. Because Kane has no parts of his body exposed except for a hand.
Right.
And Steve Austin's wrestling in underwear.
Right. Yeah, I never thought about that. That's true. Steve Austin's, in undies.
Yeah.
The cane is covered, like, all his skin's covered, so how would he bleed?
I mean, I guess if you just hit him on the top of the forehead again, then he could have a forehead cut, but, yeah.
But he doesn't have a lot of skin exposed.
No, he does not. But, yeah, it wasn't... It was a good... I like it, though. It's a good brawl, a good, you know, it's a good 1998 WWF main event-style brawl.
Not exactly what I wrote, but I said... Classic 1998, more out of the ring than in.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah, it was
Mankind comes out. It's like, how the hell is this?
Yeah, Mankind's somehow alive without his mask, just smiling because he's still trying to have his tongue hit his tooth in his nose and gets hit with a chair shot, a stunner, and then a missed chair shot.
Yep.
Because Undertaker comes out because his main goal tonight is just to kill Mankind.
Right, exactly. We'll not rest till it's over. And then Austin does kind of, like, breast bust open for real.
Yeah, because Mankind and, or Undertaker and Steve Austin both swing a chair at Mankind. He falls down because he's already been killed tonight.
Right.
And the chair, Undertaker's chair hits Steve Austin's chair, which is Steve Austin. Steve Austin is busted open.
Like the chair, very, very sharp.
Yeah. And then the Undertaker, it was, this is where it kind of comes weird, like, what was his motive? Because he then throws Earl Hebner in the ring.
Douses him
in gasoline. And then, like, was it just to wake him up?
I don't know. Maybe.
Or was he going to burn him for some reason?
I don't know.
We don't know exactly. But, yeah, so eventually he wakes up because he's been doused in gasoline. That will wake you up.
Yeah.
And he sees Steve Austin bleeding. Calls the match. And Kane wins. And that was how the pay-per-view ended.
Once again,
a very famous end to a pay-per-view. I will say that.
Oh, yeah.
Like, there
Steve
was...
Austin, like, covered in blood.
Steve Austin covered in blood. Kane winning. Steve Austin losing the title.
That's true.
Was
That's a big deal.
Huge in 1998.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure.
But then we get to Raw the next night.
We do.
It starts with Vince McMahon walking on in ridiculous shoes, which they make sure to note.
Yes.
And they also do not. Unfortunately, the night before at King of the Ring, Pat Patterson's longtime partner, Louie, who had been the hairdresser for some of the WWF crew,
mm-hmm.
passed away.
Aww.
So Pat Patterson was not at Raw that next night.
Okay.
So it made the unique Stooges crew of just Briscoe and Slaughter.
As I said, Slaughter.
Yeah.
He always needs two goons with him.
Yeah, you know, well, yeah, you can't have Vince McMahon with just Briscoe. That would be. But Steve Austin comes out and basically says to Kane, the only reason you won the title is because The Undertaker made me bleed. Will you challenge? And, you know, it goes up. Vince McMahon won't answer the challenge. Paul Bearer won't answer the challenge. Eventually, Kane accepts the challenge. Yeah, because he's questioning his manhood, which you don't do to a burned victim, apparently.
So they have the rematch.
Yep, they had the big rematch, and it was at the Gund Arena.
It was
one of the bigger Raw matches at this to this point.
I could see that. Yeah.
I mean, it was a world title match where there were actual, like, you didn't know who was gonna win.
Yeah.
Like, you could easily see Kane winning, and you know, because it's one night, so Kane could win in the whole of the next pay per view.
Yeah.
Or Austin wins it back because. He's the guy.
Right. Yeah. It was what she did. And like,
yeah,
the crowd.
About an 8-minute match, you know, back and forth.
Paul Bearer at the end. Like
Paul Bearer at the end, yeah. He had a great reaction.
the
fans
reaction,
at ringside had a great. Like, as soon as he hits the stunner, like, everyone in the crowd just jumps up and starts going crazy. Because he hits the stunner pretty cleanly.
He did.
Like, the only thing was, is the Undertaker going to pull the referee out? Like, I remember watching and thinking, oh, God damn it, that's what's going to happen. But no, it's a clean win. Austin wins, and then the Undertaker comes in the ring. No one knows what exactly he's going to do, so Steve Austin just stuns him right away.
Yeah.
Just to cover all his bases.
Yeah, don't want to get ahead of that one.
Yeah. And Austin walks out with the title ball held high, and I'm sure he'll have no challenges over the summer. It's all good. It's all clean sailing for here.
Well,
from here.
Then what are we gonna watch next month?
Well, we'll get Fully Loaded 98, and we'll see
loaded.
Boobies. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, okay.
And 98 Fully Loaded boobies. I think you can kind of guess where we're going. All right, but let's get to our rankings first. So, what was your ranking for King of the Ring overall as a show?
I look at my past rankings because it's.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that match just kind of has to.
9 for the Rumble, WrestleMania 14. You had an 8.5, and I think it's with those.
Yeah.
It's.
I'll give it an 8.5.
All right. Yeah, I think it's definitely in the.
Because outside of the Mankind Undertaker, it's fine. I can't think of like an easy second. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the main event. I think it's kind of. Historically been overshadowed.
Yes.
Because, I mean, Undertaker Mankind is probably, like, one of the top 4 matches historically in the company history now. So.
Right.
So I'm going to go... So I had Rumble at 8, WrestleMania at 9. I'm going to go 9. Yeah, because thinking of what's coming up, I know.
Okay.
All right. Top two matches.
Okay, so Undertaker, Mankind, obviously. It's still the Rumble is my favorite, right?
As of now, yes.
I think it's probably gonna. I don't know. I just this is like in its own category.
Yeah, I'm also gonna put Undertaker, Mankind.
I think the second one that I want to put. Yeah, you're about the title match, I assume.
Yes, I'm a big proponent of it.
Snow and head's not making
sense. If you say El Snow and
too much.
Head versus too much, we're stopping the podcast.
This is the last
episode. But you can't say it just because of that, also.
No, that's fine. Of all the things that take my time, this is not high on the list, quite honestly. Yeah, I'll do a title match too.
Yeah, I think, the King of the Ring finals was really good, also, I think, but. It's just not as good. Is the Rumble still your favorite match, though?
I think so.
Yeah.
What about you?
Dude Love Steve Austin is still my favorite. I think Undertaker Mankind is more memorable, but I still like Dude Love Austin more. Yeah. Especially because watching Undertaker Mankind, you know how much it like screwed him up now. So it's kind of like... It's good to watch, but it's... There's also the whole unsettling part.
Right, yeah. It's hard to watch at times.
Yeah. So, as to what we will watch next, though, we go to the July pay-per-view.
Okay.
Fully Loaded. And if you thought No Way Out was a filler pay-per-view from Royal Rumble to WrestleMania, you ain't seen nothing yet, because
this is
all King of the Ring to SummerSlam filler.
Gotcha. Do they really have to do it every month? Could they just skip it if they had no contract?
I mean, they technically could have, but they had sold the paper. They had already promised. They were going 12 pay-per-views a year, so.
That's a high. That's a tall order.
Yep. So they are doing it whether they have a show or not.
Gotcha.
And we will see how much of a show they have.
Sounds like not a lot.
Some of it's good.
Okay. It's yellow.
It's yellow. It's butter flavored.
Yeah.
That's how I felt pushing that button today at the movie theater. Nice.
Don't think about it.
Don't think about the chemicals I'm feeding my children. All right, until next time at Fully Loaded 98.
Oh, yeah.
We'll see you then.
See you then.
Bye. Thanks. Bye.